Case number 22-5234, Beth Jordan versus Reliance Standard Life Insurance Company. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Borderline, you may proceed for the appellant.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Jeremy Borderline for the appellant, Beth Jordan. With the court's permission, I'll reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Ms. Jordan was disabled and entitled to LTD benefits continuously up to the day that she returned to work. Reliance agrees that she was disabled for 7 years leading up to the August 2016 denial date, but then denied her only 13 months before she managed to return to work. Yes, she was in the process of recovering, but she was not yet fully recovered, and claimants who try to return to work should not be penalized for doing so, which is what Reliance Standard has done here. But the way that Reliance Standard handled this claim on remand is the principal focus of appellant's arguments. The ERISA claims regulations must be found to apply at all stages of an ERISA claim, including during any and all remand proceedings. That's implicit in this court's prior rulings under the term of art full and fair review, and the Secretary of Labor made his position on the matter clear in his amicus brief in Solnin v. Sun Life. Here, Reliance Standard broke nearly every rule in the claims regulations during the second remand proceedings. The regs require a new decision maker. They require a decision maker who is not supervised by other people who previously denied the claim. They require that no deference be given to the prior denial decision. They require receiving and considering evidence submitted by the claimant. And they require a new medical opinion in cases of medical judgment. Reliance Standard did not do any of this during the second remand proceedings. Now, that's not substantial compliance with the ERISA claims regulations. That's not any kind of compliance with the ERISA claims regulations. A remand has to offer claimants a meaningful remedy. If every court-ordered ERISA remand followed the procedures that Reliance used here, what would be the point of remands? There was no possibility in the second remand of changing the outcome of this claim. No prior decision of this court supports such a limited remand procedure.
Was there any difference in the reasoning and the decision? So the district court sends it back and says the opinions of these two doctors aren't enough, basically, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
For reasons you've discussed. And then the company comes back with the same answer to a different district judge who seems unaware, perhaps, of the reason for the remand.
Perhaps.
So, but in your view, did the company offer like any different reasoning or basis the second time after the remand than it did the first time?
There's some different wording. It's a longer decision, but it's essentially the same decision. I can't discern any meaningful extra analysis, and clearly there's no additional evidence to review. And the outcome is the same.
Right.
So
same two doctors. And
right.
Now, they say that you didn't, I guess you bear the burden of proof, right? And
yes.
So they say that you didn't come forward with enough to establish disability.
Right.
So, I mean, what would you tell us this morning on that point?
Well, admittedly, the record is sparse for the last 13 months of the claim. But in the entire context of the claim, you consider that this claimant's been on claim since 2009. She's proven herself. She submitted objective testing, cardiopulmonary exercise testing from 2015. And that was never really dealt with by any of these file reviewing doctors. They mention its existence, but they don't discuss it in their report, and neither does Reliance discuss it in their denials. She had something like six different office visits with her treating doctor during that final 13 months, not counting all of the treatment with her cancer providers and her double mastectomy during this 13 months. There's certainly evidence that she continued to be disabled. If we were just looking at the last 13 months in a vacuum, I might agree that the plaintiff had failed to meet her burden of proving disability. But in the context of this entire claim and her claim history, I think that she met the burden. And her treating provider supported that by saying that, you know, yes, she had part-time sedentary capability during that final 13-month period. That's apparent from the way that she was doing her education for her nurse practitioner degree. but she did not have the capability to do full-time work during that time. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, her treater does opine unequivocally that she was disabled through September of 17.
He does, and he even expressed doubts as to whether she could sustain her return to work, and that's covered in Ms. Jordan's personal statement where she describes the type of extraordinary accommodations that she received when she returned to work. I don't know of any other hospital provider setting that would allow a practitioner, a nurse practitioner, to go home during the working day, take a break at home, and then return to complete her hospital shift. So those sorts of accommodations allowed her to return to work, but without that, I don't think she would have been able to do it when she did. At this point, the court should consider the evidence itself, or direct the district court to do so. I mean, we've had two remands in this claim at this point. The record is complete. There is no additional evidence to send this back for development with the insurer. And frankly, they've had two or three bites at the apple at this point, and I don't think that they should get another opportunity to review the evidence. The court system, whether it's this court or the district court, should consider that evidence and decide whether she has met her burden at this point.
You want to say anything more about the medical information? It seems that the insurance company doctors were using incorrect dates with respect to her treatment, and the only correct dates, no, I shouldn't say the only correct dates, but predominantly the correct dates pertaining to your client's treatment seem to be that of her personal treating physician, but we have all this incorrect medical information in the reports of these insurance company doctors, or I shouldn't call them insurance company doctors, but doctors who were engaged or employed by the insurance company to review your client's records.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'd say that the principal mistake of fact there is the date that she started her clinicals. Basically, the IME doctor, Dr. Sintef, who reviewed and met with Ms. Jordan on the first remand, he worked backwards. He knew that she had returned to work in the fall of 2017, and he was familiar with this nurse practitioner program. And in his own head, without any information from Ms. Jordan apparently, he assumed that she started her classroom practice in 2015 and started her clinical practice in 2016. And he said, well, I know how these clinical practices work. It's the equivalent of a full-time job. If she could do a full-time job of clinical practice as of August 2016, then I think she could work as of August 2016. But that was all mistaken.
He had the dates wrong. He thought she had, he assumed she was not disabled because of when she did her clinical practice, but the dates he used for that were not the correct dates.
And despite being corrected on that point during the third round of litigation, or rather the second round of litigation, Reliance Standard adhered to a date that has no basis in the factual record. August 1st, I know it's August of 2016. August 1st of 2016 is not a date that has any relevance to Ms. Jordan's medical records or her improvement or recovery. So the fact that on the second remand proceedings they clung to that same date rather than re-examining the evidence and say, oh, she actually stopped being disabled on another date. Whether it's, you know, the day she actually returned to work or not, they should have at least adjusted their decision to match some piece of actual evidence, especially having had that pointed out by the court. I will briefly address with my remaining time the issue of the law of the case doctrine. Judge Kethless, you brought it up a little bit with the fact that We have two district court judges reviewing the evidence and sort of coming to different conclusions here. I think it was implicit in the district court's final decision to explain that changed rationale. If they were going to make any kind of a...
Like the court had an obligation.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. There was no change in facts, obviously, because there were new facts.
These are decisions passing in the night, you know, these two district court.
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's an abuse of discretion standard there, but I think it was an abuse of discretion to make a completely contrary ruling on a point that was, you know, the foundation or one of two foundations for the second remand decision and not to explain it.
How long have you been litigating this?
This particular case, she's been my client since 2011 on an earlier denial, but this case has been in litigation since early 2016.
Okay, 7 years in.
Yes, sir.
All right.
And where do things stand with the attorney fees? The district court has awarded attorney fees?
They have awarded attorney's fees, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so are you asking that we review any attorney fee?
Not at this
point?
Okay. No, thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
That's my point. Thank you all.
Thank you. Good morning, may it please the court?
Good morning.
Good morning. Joshua Bachrach, I represent the Appley Reliance. A couple points on the attorney's fee issue that Your Honor raised. The court awarded attorney's fees for the for an earlier period of time. We did not appeal that. So I don't think it was properly raised in the appeal brief, but it's not an issue anymore. It's been mooted out.
Is there any issue of attorney fees subsequent to that award? Or is that out of the picture?
That's out of the picture. I mean, obviously, we don't think the court should. If there's a reversal, then that opens the pages up to a potential fee claim by counsel. But again, we don't think there should be. So what I'd like to do is to start where counsel did, and that is with the issue of the remand, because I think it's important to note here, this wasn't a remand to review the claim from start. This was a remand by that court to look at two discrete issues. The court made the findings that there were two flaws in the decision that was remanded. One, that the Reliance did not explain why it preferred the opinions of not just two doctors, by the way, there's the IME doctor and then two peer-reviewed doctors, over Dr. Heinsohn, the treating doctor. But also that it did not fully address the part-time work issue or the part-time schooling issue. So that is a narrow issue. That is a narrow remand. The court also found, and this is the important part, that she is not clearly entitled to benefits based on the administrative record. That's the earlier judge. Not clearly entitled. So what do you do?
So what, you know, I don't really see what the company did here as to what seemed to be rather patent mistakes.
Well, it did
in the earlier reasoning. So Centef, as Judge Clay points out, he doesn't understand what her clinical schedule actually was. He's got a mistake of fact at the core of his premises of his analysis. Smith does a file review. He's never treated her, obviously. He's never examined her. And he says that the documentation does not include medical records. It's all he's got is documentation. Does not include medical records relevant to the condition from her condition from an occupational medical perspective.
Right, that means she can't carry her burden. And that's what the district court concluded when it remanded. It said, she has not established that she's clearly entitled to benefits, but I do have a concern about the denial. I want you to address them.
Well, I guess that's your read of it, but he then proceeds with no apparent basis to say she can do all kinds of things like push and pull 60 pounds and so on.
Well,
so his opinion, so he didn't examine her, the treater did. He's saying the records, granted, you know, aren't adequate, but why should we give any credence to his opinion based on the records that he says don't allow him to opine?
Well, my problem with that the way you're wording that is, Your Honor, it's their burden.
Right.
So they didn't prove their
burden. They have a treating physician.
They have a treating physician.
Whose experience is not limited to reading a cold file. And that treating physician opines, based on his interaction with her, including six times in the relevant period, that she could not have done this. So why isn't that enough?
Because that doctor failed to even mention the fact or address the fact that she is able to do this schooling and become a nurse practitioner. The fact that she does clinicals part-time, but that's 6 hours a day she's doing it. And the doctor, by the way, that doctor said she had cognitive issues, and that's why she can't work.
Learning disability.
A learning problem.
Right.
And said, I'm going to refer her to somebody to address these, and never did. That's a finding by the district court.
She might have needed a root canal. It doesn't seem to have a whole lot to do with whether Lyme disease was preventing her from being able to maintain a full-time work schedule.
So where is the evidence that it did prevent her at that point, Your Honor? There is none. Again, for 13 months, there's no treatment. There's no referral. He said she had weakness. By the time of the IME, and let's say Dr. Sentef was off by a few months, by the time of the IME, he's doing a full exam, and he's saying she is not physically precluded from working at this point.
Who, Sentef?
Yes, Sentef.
Okay, well,
but where's her evidence? There is no evidence by her that she isn't.
All right, well,
Dr. Sentef, he examined her, and he's the only insurance doctor who actually examined her in 2018. But she's seeking benefits, however, from August 2016 to September 2017. And the insurance company didn't have anybody examine her during that time frame or even prior to that time frame. Well,
Your Honor, as I'm sure you're aware, under the law of this circuit, under the Supreme Court precedent, there is no requirement to conduct an IME. The court said that it's evidence.
You're rebutting something I didn't say. I didn't say there was an IME.
I'm just clarifying that. So there isn't. The important part is it's her burden of proof.
Right. Yeah, but she had all kinds of documentation from her treating physician, and the quality of the evidence the insurance company was using to rebut that is very questionable. For example, the insurance company subjected her to surveillance back in 2015, wherein they said that she went out to walk a dog and she was able to grasp a leash that she had the dog on, and therefore that meant that she wasn't disabled because she was able to hold a dog on a leash. Now, of course, that's not the time period for which the benefits are being requested, which again is August 2016 to September 2017.
The reason that was mentioned, Your Honor, is because her own doctor, the same doctor she's still relying on, who said she had weakness and couldn't grasp, and we said she is grasping, but that wasn't the whole basis for the decision, and we paid benefits. Here's a good point to make here. Reliance concluded that the benefits should have ended earlier. And then Dr. Sentef said, you know what, she did have weakness back then, and Reliance paid benefits for an additional period of time. So what we have here is this period starting in August of 2016 through September when she admits she's no longer disabled. So we can't say that, well, she was disabled
well,
in the past.
She just said, she's I don't know if she put it that way.
It's there, and she
Let
has.
Me finish.
Sorry, you're
right. I don't think she put it that way. I think she said she was just not going to contest it and fight you guys further about after 9/17. So we're talking about 1 year of benefits, is that right?
13 months, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, so, okay. And, I mean, getting back to the evidence in the case, let's set to one side whether her treater, who examined her for, you know, treated her for this period of time, whether that doctor's opinion is sufficient evidence. Looking at your rebuttal evidence, I mean, the one we haven't talked about, so Sentef makes a mistake. Smith, by his own terms, doesn't seem to have a basis to offer an opinion. And that leaves you with Shoup, who's an oncologist, right?
Well, correct.
And his opinion is that from a medical oncology perspective, she's not disabled. That's his opinion, right? So That's not the basis on which she's claiming disability.
Exactly. But it was addressed.
Right. So it's like as if a dentist came in and said, from a dental perspective, she's fine. It's not germane to what we're talking about. Unless, am I wrong on that?
I think you are, Your Honor. I'll explain why. What if we did not address it? Then she'd say we didn't give a full and fair review.
Okay, no, that's fine. So you're being thorough.
Yes.
But he doesn't count for anything to undermine the idea that she's disabled because of Lyme disease.
Correct.
Okay, so you don't have much on that point in terms of rebuttal. It's not your burden, but unless I'm missing something, it seems like all of these people, the three that you have, aren't really worth much on
this. I disagree because there is the other doctor who did the peer review, and there's the IME,
too.
Who is
that?
Is it Dr. Shoup, I believe?
Well, he's the oncologist.
I'm sorry.
Smith. But he's the guy who says the records don't allow one to opine on this, and yet he opines.
Well, no, because there's no medical records. The doctor's reaching that conclusion because there's no treatment records during the relevant period. Mm-hmm. So now you look at, and by the way, if somebody...
So he's agnostic at best.
I disagree. He's saying there's no records to support it. She didn't treat during this period of time, except for the oncologist.
There's a difference between opining about the sufficiency of the records, on the one hand, and saying they're not enough, and opining about her actual condition. Is that fair? Is that distinction fair?
It is.
Okay, and so he can opine about the sufficiency, which he does, but then he also goes on and opines about what she can push and pull and lift, et cetera. And that's what it seems like by his own terms, he has no basis. So what am I missing about this distinction and his ability to make that opinion?
I think what's missing is what's missing in the record, and that is treatment. That is her own doctor who said she has cognitive problems. I'm going to send her to somebody.
It's a different, this is not the question I asked. So
I understand.
But so I guess I'm just telling you, his opinion seems basically irrelevant here, and I'm trying to give you a chance to explain why we ought to take his substantive opinion seriously. And so, I mean, we can talk about other things. I'm just telling you that's where I'm at.
The district court looked at this. The district court looked at those reports.
We were here to review the
district. I understand that. And what the district court said in there was, all I have from the plaintiff is Dr. Heinsohn. And Dr. Heinsohn said she has cognitive issues. I'm going to send her to somebody, and he does
more than that.
Well, Dr. Heinsohn also said she has weakness, and I was going and suggested electrodiagnostic testing, which never happened. And we know that she got better. And the other important part here is, Your Honor, this definition applicable to her at the time the benefits ended isn't to become a nurse practitioner, isn't even to do her earlier job. It's an any occupation standard, which is it places a high hurdle on a claimant. So if she can do sedentary, which nurse practitioning is a lot more demanding, if she can do sedentary, she's not totally disabled. And what the...
Well, I mean, it would help your case if you had a competent medical opinion to that effect.
Well, I think we do have that in these doctors, but more importantly, again, we can't flip the burden here. The burden is on her, and her doctor said she has this problem, I'm going to send her to somebody, and he doesn't. The doctor says she has this problem still, and I'm going to send her to somebody, and he doesn't.
He says, you know, as to the relevant period, until recently she's been disabled on a continuous and complete basis on the basis of her Lyme disease with associated fatigue, weakness, difficulty concentrating, paresthesias, and other deficits, which are outlined in my medical records, all through the 17.
But they're not. The doctor doesn't treat her for Lyme disease in this 13-month period. There's nothing.
I mean, you're kind of disagreeing with his treatment or something rather than what he's saying about her condition. I mean,
if her condition is disabling, her weakness is disabling, you do something about it. You change medications. You send her, because that's not truly a specialist in Lyme disease, that doctor. He's overseeing her overall treatment. And so he even says, we'll send her to a neuro...
These guys specialists in Lyme disease, these three that the company has?
No, they're looking at her physical capabilities.
Okay, but so they're not qualified to Lyme disease either.
They're not. But what I'm saying is refer her to a specialist to meet her burden of proof. That didn't happen. That did not happen. She did not carry her burden of proof multiple times over. And that's probably, and by the way, Your Honor said, why didn't you do an IME earlier? We tried. The reason this was remanded the first time was she failed to show up to an IME. And the district court said that she failed to state a reasonable basis for doing it and that it wasn't futile for her not to have exhausted. So this would have been done years earlier if his client had done what she should have done.
Maybe she didn't feel well that day.
No, well.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you have any authority for the proposition that we ought to impeach a treating physician's opinion or any other physician's opinion, where it would be treating, based on the kind of therapeutic decisions that the doctor was making along at the time? You know, sort of impeaching it by, well, you know, if that was really true, you should have done X, Y, and Z. Is there a case that adopts that reasoning?
You're placing the burden back on the defendant.
No, again. I'm not. I'm asking you about the case law.
Is there case law that says...
You're making this point. I'm asking if any case law supports
I'm
it.
I'm sure I could find some, Your Honor.
Well,
that makes
I'm just asking if you know now.
Head, can I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I will tell you that in Black and Decker versus Nord, the court stated that defendants in these cases don't have to give special weight to a treating doctor's opinion.
Sure, that's established.
That's established. And also, we are under the arbitrary and capricious standard. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at the record and say, is it arbitrary and capricious? And the court, if I may finish this, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate that. Counsel relied on the law of the case doctrine previously. Well, that would also include the judge's conclusion prior to the remand decision that she had not established that she was clearly entitled to benefits. And therefore, under ERISA, you can't award benefits based on, you know, it has to be benefits due under the terms of the plan. And she didn't prove that. So the court has twice concluded, the district court, that she didn't prove that she was entitled to benefits, or that, and the last time, that the denial was not arbitrary and capricious. And so that is fully supported. Our position is she did not carry her weight, her burden here, and therefore the judgment should be affirmed.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll hear rebuttal.
Thank you. Counsel argues that this was not a remand for a full, complete review of the entire claim. And I would not argue that a district court is incapable of ordering a remand on a limited question, but on that limited question, there must be full and fair review as defined by the claims regs. The claimant must have the opportunity to offer new evidence. The insurer must, you know, obtain a new medical opinion, all of the procedures that are guaranteed by the ERISA claims regulations. And here, that none of that happened during the second remand proceedings.
The what court did say in response to Mr. Bachrach's point that the treating physician's records, Hindzone, don't sort of flesh out or document your client's disability sufficiently to meet your burden?
Right, Your Honor. So Dr. Hindzone's treatment records, specifically during this period, is just a matter of follow-up. And as we know, treatment records don't always document everything that these doctors view when they meet with a person and speak to a person. So it's a matter of continuation, basically. Dr. Hindzone had been seeing her for years. She did see Lyme disease specialists earlier in her course of care, earlier in her period of disability. They offer treatment, but frankly, there's not a lot that can be done with chronic Lyme disease. They offer you antibiotics and they tell you to rest. So she was continuing to do that. And Dr. Hindzone had the benefit of observation and knowledge of the facts. Dr. Sintef got to meet with Ms. Jordan, but it was about a year and a half after she returned to work. So
When was that? Was it like in 19 or something?
It was in early 2018, Your Honor. It was in 19, about a year and a half after she returned to work. So, you know, his misapprehension of the school schedule kind of led to his mistaken judgment. And Reliance Standard was told by the district court that they could have recontacted Dr. Sinteff and said, you got this wrong. Does that change your opinion? They didn't do that during the second remand either, when they could have. And I'm not saying that they were required to, but they certainly could have. Let's see. Oh, on the question of her cognitive problems, yes, Dr. Heinzen mentioned referring her for further testing. You know, that wasn't done. But there's other evidence of her cognitive difficulties in the form of her professor's statement. And all of the accommodations that she received at school, she got extra time, she got people to help with her notes, she required additional time to study for and pass her board exams. So while it's not in the form of a medical record, there's certainly evidence that she did suffer from cognitive difficulties, which delayed her return to work. And as far as her being able to return to some other form of work, yes, nurse practitioner is not the lightest job in the world. Social Security agreed that she was limited to sedentary work and could do sedentary work, but would require medical absences on an unpredictable basis, which are themselves going to be disabling. You have to be a reliable employee. And with her needing, you know, infrequent but still, you know, a few times a month medical absences, she would be functionally disabled under either the Social Security standard or the standard applicable to these cases. And that's really what Dr. Heinzen was opining on. He agreed and he acknowledged her school schedule. He did address it in his final opinion, contrary to counsel's argument, and said that, I understand she was able to do school. She did it on a part-time basis, and I'm worried about her. She may return to work, but it's going to be tough. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. And the case is submitted.